So when I was 20 and my sister was 16, we traveled together. She had just finished a year in Israel, and I joined her in Israel. We traveled around Israel together. We went to Holland, and then we went to England, where my mom is from. And I grew up in a home, very British mother. The home was always spotless. And when guests came over, it was even more spotless. Everything, any kind of mess or disorganization was hidden away. The table was set, everything was ready. There was a whole sort of formality about it that I quite loved. I got to match the fancy teacups with their matching saucers, and that was my role as a child to create a sense of home into which guests could come. And when I was traveling in England, my sister and I stayed for about a week with my cousin Josie. And Josie was not like my mom. Josie swore like a sailor. She smoked. She was a lesbian, but nobody talked about it. She spoke like things were, and her house was a mess. And I loved staying with her. And from the second that I walked into the door, she hugged me. She was like, "Okay, this is how it's going to go. I'm not waiting on you hand and foot. Here's where this is. Here's where this is. Just help yourself. You're allowed to take me out for dinner once, but I don't want any gifts. Don't buy me shit. I don't need shit. And I'm so glad you're here." And for me, that became such a model of inviting in guests that I wanted to adopt. So this next hour is focused on tikkun midot practice, the beautiful practice that we talk about as applied mindfulness. How do we take what we develop internally, the qualities that we nurture, shine a light on where these different character traits already flow with ease and shining brilliance, and where are places where they're a little sticky, where there are obstacles, where there's conditioning that constricts us? We shine a light on all of it so we can more easily bring these qualities out into our daily action. So the midah, the character trait that we are pairing with our connection to home, is hachnasat ochim, bringing in guests. And that means literal guests, and that means inviting in what is foreign in all kinds of ways. And the ways that we engage in tikkun midot practice draws its orientation from Kabbalistic and Hasidic teaching, that rather than understanding these as character flaws to fix, it's with an understanding that we have within us, in our inherent nature, radiant divine qualities of generosity, compassion, responsiveness, patience, and so on. And all we need to do is shine them, move out of the way anything that's obstructing them, but actually just to let our natural divine qualities to come forth and shine. So, to direct us into an exploration of hachnasat ochim, welcoming guests, would you think about a time when you felt truly, truly welcomed? Can you think of a moment, an experience of really being invited in? And I think it would be juicy to hear some of them.
Crazy considering the context. When I was 15 years old, my best friend was for me. And we had a house lived in Denver, 15
Thank you. Others.
This is more recent. A few years ago, we were going to Israel, and we just had one of those ridiculous journeys, delayed flights, all of that. And we were staying at the home of some friends who had a separate apartment that we were staying in. And we were so frazzled when we got there, and we weren't sure when or where we were going to eat. What meal it was. And our friends just said, "Oh, we'll feed you." And they made this big pot of spaghetti and opened a bottle of wine, and we felt so welcome.
Thank you. Yeah.
When I was 20, I was spending the summer in Paris, and I made a friend, and we are still friends. And when his son got married, my husband and I traveled to the wedding in France, and they're Jewish, and they were under the chuppah. And at the end of the ceremony, my husband and I watched how every single person that was a guest at the wedding waited online to approach the chuppah, to go under the chuppah, to be blessed by the bride and the groom, who were apparently closest to God at that moment. And I remember waiting on this line, having never been a part of such a tradition or seen this ritual, and going under the chuppah, and the bride and the groom lifted a tallis, put it over my husband and my head, and told us how grateful they were that we were there, and that I was their father's oldest friend, and I felt so welcome.
It's a beautiful story.
Yes.
When I was in college in Baltimore, the Baltimore Jewish community made sure that every student, their students who wanted a college camp, would have one. And I was embraced by Aunt Dorothy and Uncle Philip. Changed my life. Mm-hmm. She became so close to me, second mom. We were so close that we wore almost the same size shoes. And I would break them in, but my dog was in my and forever, they were so close in there. They had three boys, and I became a
gorgeous. Oh my goodness. Should we hear one more?
I'm feeling that way about being invited into Martin. Mm.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was also noticing how different this moment feels than the moment we first arrived. It feels like there's a collective settling warmth that's also part of this home welcome experience. Somebody over here had a hand up.
When I was 17, I went to a draft resistance demonstration with Chelsea Daly. For a blessing, to keep them from the draft. One of them, blocked by people wearing tallis and tefillin. And so I'd never seen that before. They were great. And they said, "Why don't you come for dinner? You've not been for it." I've never heard anything like that before. And that was the Chabrat Shalom, and they invited me for dinner, and they've been my friends now.
Oh boy.
These stories are so beautiful.
They're choking me up.
One of the things that I so much appreciate about Tikkun Midot practice and these stories that really anchor how we think about who we want to be and how we show up in the world, it's not abstract. We really want to be grounded in experiences that have already nourished us. I bet everybody has a story of at some point being welcomed, included, opened to. And that gets to be the seed from which we explore what might be next in the development of your engagement with welcoming others, hachnasat olchim. And I want to turn, there's a source sheet in your packet that says tikkun midot practice, to take a really close look at the narrative in Bereshit, in Genesis, of Abraham and Sarah, who are seen as the archetypes of this quality of hospitality. And we'll look at it closely in a second, but just to frame that it's a narrative of Abraham sitting at the entrance of his tent, seeing these travelers, running to meet them, bringing them in, and offering them shade and rest and food and drink.
And he was just circumcised.
So he wasn't in the best shape, perhaps. We'll get to more of that, Nebuch. And to hold in the context, as we start to look at the text, to hold what Alan Liu reminded us of the context of Abraham and Sarah, that just in the parsha before this one, they heard the lech lecha. They heard this call to get up and leave, to leave their home, their birthplace, their father's house, to be travelers, unhoused, and to come to create home in an uncertain new place. So the experience that he is, that they're both coming from, let's hold that awareness of the unhoused that leads to this hospitality moment. So let's take a look. I'd love to read the whole thing through, and then we'll see what's in the details. How might this narrative guide us in our own hospitality practice? Yud-Heh Vav-Heh appeared to him by the terebinth of Mamre. He was sitting at the entrance of the tent as the day grew hot. Looking up, he saw three figures standing near him. He saw them and ran from the entrance of the tent to greet them, and bowing to the ground, he said, Adonai, my Lord, if it please you, do not go past your servant. Let a little water be brought, bathe your feet and recline under the tree. And let me fetch a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourselves. Then go on, seeing that you have come your servant's way. They replied, do as you have said. Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, quick, three se'ahs of choice flour, knead and make cakes. Then Abraham ran to the herd, took a calf, tender and choice, and gave it to a servant boy who hastened to prepare it. He took curds and milk and the calf, not a kosher meal, that had been prepared and set these before them. And he waited on them under the trees as they ate, just to there. So starting at the beginning, we have the word vayera. Vayera elav yud-heh vav-heh. God appeared to him be'alonei mamre, which we could translate as in the oaks of Mamre. He had this sense of seeing, feeling, perceiving the divine in the trees. And he's sitting at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. So first this curiosity comes. What's this scene that is being set, that is our introduction to all the hospitality that flows forth from this moment. I love that he's sitting at the entrance of the tent. And Rashi, if you look on the next page, understands that it's not just because it was coolest at the opening of the tent, but actually he was deliberately sitting there so that anyone who passed, he was ready to invite them into his tent. He's positioning himself with readiness, and he's in an open vision kind of moment. We'll get more to that in a second. Kechom hayom, in the heat of the day. Let's look at the second piece that Rashi says. The Holy One, blessed be, brought the sun out of its sheath, that he, Abraham, might not be troubled by travelers. So interesting. Thanks, God. It's hot. Keep the travelers away. Avram's healing from circumcision. God thought he was doing Abraham a favor. But when God perceived that he was grieved that no travelers came, God brought him angels in the form of men. Very sweet interpretation by Rashi, that initially God withheld travelers, but what Abraham was yearning for was this relationship, the ability to bring in those who are on the road. Now let's look at verse 2. Vayisa enav, he lifted his eyes, vayar, and he saw, vehine, hey, and here, shlosha anashim nitzavim alav, three people, I love this word nitzavim, we have it in other places of Torah, kind of standing over him, standing on him almost, impressing themselves upon him. Vayar, we have this the word again, he sees, vayaratz likratam, he ran toward them, mipetach ha'ohel, from the entrance of the tent, v'ishtachu arza, and he bowed down to the ground. What do you hear in this verse that might guide us in the practice of hospitality? Like the next book after Eat, Pray, Love, See, Run, Bow. He saw, he ran, he bowed. All verbs. Is there more that you want to say about those?
No hesitation.
There's no hesitation. The direct relationship from seeing, which doesn't require any movement, but requires awareness, right away to whole body engagement, and then running to them, and the bow is such humility. Beautiful. What else do you notice? Yeah, Mitchell.
I feel like we kind of bury the lead here because it starts with doing what God had appeared to him. I mean, what is that all about? And to me, that sets all of this up. In other words, it was that spiritual engagement preceded all of this. So,
beautiful. Let's actually look on the other page at Midrash Sechel Tov from the 12th century. And in this sort of Midrash, this interpretation, focusing on the seeing. He saw. What is the verse teaching and stating he saw twice? Actually, in those two verses, three times. He saw that the Shekhinah was resting upon them and immediately ran to greet them from the opening of the tent. So, Mitchell, as you were saying, he's in a state where he's already perceiving divinity. He's seeing divinity in the trees, in the oaks, and it's that he's in practice already. And so when he sees people walking by, he doesn't just, first he notices them, and then right away perceives divinity within them. Beautiful. And I'll just finish the section that of this commentary. He began to run from there until he reached them. As it is written, he ran to greet them. That may have been quite some distance, in that he appeared like a bird taking flight. I love that image. If you've ever seen like storks trying to take flight, the running and the flying. But regarding Lot, it is written, this is in the next segment of Torah, it is not written he ran, rather he rose, vayakam, like a person rising after toiling. So when Lot stands up to greet visitors, like
All right.
But for Abraham, off and running. Yes?
In the verse you think about there,
mm-hmm.
Is the Hebrew also passive?
Vayera elav, yeah.
Because it's interesting that that's the one place where this is passive and the rest is very active.
Mm-hmm.
It's that you don't see God, God appears.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was an interesting way of setting the stage, as Mitchell said. Mm. Not the same experience.
And interesting, and it's beautiful pointing that out. There's something very receptive that then shapes how his what's the Heschel phrase, eyes remade for wonder. It's like the lenses get tinted by divinity. So he receives it, perceives it, and then it colors everything. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And then what do we have? He says, verse 3, he calls them Adonai. Striking. So he even names them a name of divinity. Imatzatichen, if I have found favor in your eyes, don't go past. This request and this already creating relationship, please don't go on your way. Let a little water be brought. Bathe your feet and recline under the tree. And let me fetch a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourselves. Just want to find the Hebrew is quite lovely. Ekha pat lechem v'sa'adu libchem. May your hearts feast. Isn't that
eat
lovely?
To your heart's content, yeah.
Eat your heart out. Right. And then you can go on your way. And they replied, sure. Yeah, Rex.
I just want to go back to the verb you chose. And it's really kind of asked. Starting from this point, Abraham has already conceived awareness of the event. And then conceives presence. Then receives them. And it's such a twist of our usual attitude toward hospitality. We think of hospitality as an act.
Thanks.
This is saying, no, hospitality is an act.
Beautiful.
Thank you, receive company.
Mm-hmm. Receive company, engagement. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the story about how when you visit someone who's ill, and point of fact, since he was just serving, all this activity happens, a lot of activity. And yet, the very
Beautiful. And even though there's a clear host and guest, the mutuality, the interrelationship is so mutually nourishing, healing, as you said. Is there another hand? Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. This wasn't get it. Let me get some cookies from the cupboard. Let me take a calf, skin it, cook it. So really beautifully noticing the effort, the labor involved in it, the length of time, that sense of it's not, you know, come for a cup of tea and go on your way, but come rest here. Really be nourished here, and we will go out of our way to prepare things for you.
That's right.
For my mom's teacups, yeah.
And then didn't he say a morsel of bread at the beginning? Mm-hmm. This is what he considers
a morsel of bread, right.
It's a Jewish morsel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
62. Yeah. And looking at the next few verses, what else do you notice? Then Abraham ran to the herd, took a calf, tender and choice, and gave it to a servant boy who hastened to prepare it. He took curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them, and he waited on them under the tree as they ate. What else is here? Yeah.
Not to take anything away from Abraham, but he's got a whole household that he has basically mobilized. And that, in fact, to have that level of hospitality, you have to have a household.
Mm.
So we go back to the morning teaching where the wife was mentioned as the household.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And if we actually took that out of a comma and if we took that in, so there's always something behind, but you have to see it.
Thank
you. Beautiful. And I hear in what you're saying, so there's a, if there's more than one person, there's a whole culture. So you're sort of touching on all kinds of questions of what is the culture of hospitality that we create in a home, in a neighborhood, in a community, in a city, and wider circles, so that when there are those who are vulnerable, who are in need, there's an activation of a whole community to be able to support and respond.
It makes me think of all the teaching that happens. Watch what I'm doing, not what I'm saying, and in the prayer, teach your children. That's what
I can't stop thinking about years ago I read about a Pew survey of synagogues and churches all across the country. And why people joined a particular one. And overwhelmingly, the answer was because someone welcomed me when I came in the door. Period. That was all it took for them to want to be there, was that someone actually was interested in welcoming them. I've never forgotten that study.
I also love that the word yemaher appears multiple times, hurried. That there's a quickness of responsiveness. There isn't a committee meeting to decide how they should they welcome them, what are the pros and cons, and those conversations have an important place, but he acts right away.
If you see that action without any hesitation, you can do it, and then you feel relaxed.
Beautiful. One last thing I want to point here to notice. In verse 2, the anashim nitzavim alav. They are kind of standing over him or upon him almost. They make such an impression on him in seeing them. And at the end, it says about Abraham, v'hu omed alehem. He stands upon them to respond. He's ready to respond to any need that they may have. So this beautiful, there are so many verbs and sort of dynamics of movement in here that include him standing over them. Michael.
Sort of curious to me, and he waited on that.
Mm-hmm.
So in the welcoming culture that I'm familiar with, I wait on somebody, but I would also join them.
Mm.
Right? I mean, it's participatory. This feels something different. Maybe the Hebrew says something different, but he waited on them as not integrating with them so much as serving them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, feels like a different kind of welcoming than culturally.
What do you think that's about in this case? And it's a question for anybody. What's that?
Honoring.
Beautiful.
They're part of the divine.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Interesting. The thing that comes to me here is the sort of social context that these are travelers who are far from home, in the heat of the day, exhausted, hungry, needing rest and shade. And so Abraham, who's been sitting in the entrance of his tent, doesn't have the same needs that they do. There's a real refined attunement to what they need. And so I hear in that kind of waiting on them, him attending to their vulnerability, to everything that they need. He's present with them, but his needs are different. So it's not the same kind of sitting with. And it's a question that we can bring in just a moment. We're going to turn to another text, thinking about other contexts for responding to needs and hospitality. How do we extrapolate this narrative to different contexts and different needs?
Just one of the pieces of backstory is that when I go to Egypt, not what I'm saying, but read, imagine when they will be going to Rar in the next chapter, also not welcome, in a way. When they imagine it not being welcome, so this, the context of it is so radically different.
Mm-hmm.
I do like to point out in this particular text that the last three words of verse 6, Lucy but see a goat, is really an English phrase, Lucy, I see a goat.
That's very funny.
Lucy.
I see a ghost. So turn to the third page. We have a section from Avot de Rabbi Natan, a commentary on Pirkei Avot. And so first a quote from Pirkei Avot. Yosef ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim says, "May your home be widely open, and may the poor be regulars in your home, and let the poor be members of your household." So we have the image of the openness of the tent being carried in here, but a shift to from travelers on the way, people who are far from home, to speaking about the poor who may be right next door to you in your own place, who aren't physically displaced, but economically, socially dislocated and therefore vulnerable. So the commentary goes on to say, "May your home be widely open." How so? This teaches that a person's home should be widely open to the south, east, west, and north, just as Job did when he made four doorways to his home. And why did Job make four doorways to his home? So that the poor would not suffer by having to circle the entire house. Instead, one coming from the north would enter just as he came. One coming from the south would enter just as she came. And so in every direction. This is why Job made four doorways to his home. What do you hear in this? By the way, there's nothing in the book of Job that makes reference to this four doorways. But it's interesting that Job, whose actually children were crushed in a house when the four walls collapsed upon them, draws from that narrative to Job's sensitivity of openness of the house. Quite striking. So what's this teaching?
Yeah. I think it's taking perspective, putting yourself in the shoes of somebody outside and trying to figure out, how can I do this? Right, it's like not waiting to be asked.
Mm-hmm. And not put, yeah, go ahead.
I was thinking about the two stories that you told me today. We spoke about anything you want, it's yours. It was an overwhelming offer. You're in the desert, and it wasn't give you a it wasn't wash your feet, and they're taking this life saving thing and using it to make the guests.
Beautiful, and all the more so for someone who's poor, that the onus isn't on them to work so hard to receive.
You shouldn't feel
shame
mm-hmm. receiving.
Right.
Yeah.
Similar to that, I thought about this hierarchy. Poor, by definition, don't have what you have. You're welcoming them into your house and want to make sure they feel not apart from you or below, but equal, which is about welcoming the stranger and the other. Very much.
And what an important additional lens. There's the traveler, the poor person. They're both different from the one who is in the home. So hospitality not just being about inviting those who are like us, but a real emphasis on look for the different lives, different needs, different moments to create connection. You had your hand up.
I was thinking that all feel dislocated all the time, and that there's something about feeling, you know, when you have a home, but you're grieving or whatever it is, and that let people in so we can all be dislocated together in a way is very holding and makes a community.
Beautiful. Beautifully put. Let's look at the second paragraph. Abraham would go out and wander in the world. And when he would find guests, he would bring them into his house. If someone was not accustomed to eating wheat bread, he fed them wheat bread. If it was not their custom to eat meat, he fed them meat. If it was not their custom to drink wine, he gave them wine. And not only this, but he stood up and built a large palace at the crossroads and placed food and drink there. And anyone who came by and entered would eat and drink and offer blessings to heaven. This is why Abraham was given ease of spirit. What's in this paragraph?
Radical yeah, Bob. Hospitality.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get past the, you would wander around and find guests. Like they didn't show up at the house.
Yeah.
Sounds like Susan.
What was the guy's name? Jeff Seidel,
yeah.
Who would have, sort of pick up travelers to Got a place for Shabbos? Got a place for Shabbos?
Still there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. But really, that's pretty radical. To spend his time walking around looking for people who look like they could use somewhere to be drawn in, to be brought in. Yeah, Elliot.
Isn't it core? I think it was in the previous page. Core of this is the notion that God is in everything. So it's not just this stranger, it's bringing in the divine.
Beautiful. Both at the same time. Isn't that interesting and potent in the practice, the sensitivity and awareness of the person's, anybody's, each person's divinity, and to see where they're struggling simultaneously. So it's not a kind of blurring of the physical world, the very real social, economic, spiritual, emotional struggles. It's not a bypassing over those things, but a beautifully and importantly seeing them in the same lens, seeing them together.
Yeah. Without a filter, and with truly seeing not what appears, but seeing within. It's a different kind of seeing, where everybody is equal, because everybody is created in the image, perfect and imperfect.
Yes.
I can't read this text, and especially this commentary. One of our teachers, mentors, Rabbi Alexander Shinkin, for whom this would be the guiding text, I wish he blew open the walls of distance to non-Jewish study of Judaism, so we need to look for people, invite them in, and lower the barriers, meet where they are at, and share the riches of this tradition.
I want to look at one more piece, and then I'm going to send you into the. It's, yeah. So okay, let's spend a moment on that. You know, on the one hand, it could be that you would think, and I think there's value in saying, make what reminds them of home. Be deliberate about giving them something that they are used to. Why would this? What do you see in, clearly this isn't in the text itself, but this is in the commentary. What would be the value of giving them something that they're not familiar with? Something.
I interpreted this that these are high-end foods that most people don't have. It's wheat bread, it's davka, it's like, it's wheat bread, it's meat, it's wine, it's, I forget, he was
the
like
finest.
Giving them the finest, that's how I read it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And in that sense, I think of, you know, visiting other cultures and tasting things that I'm not familiar with, and the experience of being welcomed in. Also be
were we talking about meat? Is that what you
mean? Yeah, yeah.
The wine or the meat? Yeah.
Old wine and fatted meat. He said, well, I don't have that. Here's some lentils. And so he gave him lentils. Then the guy died. And people ran around and said, I'm not fine. He killed it.
Great. I don't know. I'm really confused.
Yeah. Also, I get really high end food. Some of you usually can't afford this, but I don't know. All things.
I think we can take it also with a grain of salt. Throw some good salt stuff. In
really?
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think brings attention to what is the way that we share what is ours to share, in abundance, in connection, not force feeding vegetarians to eat meat, but how to offer something that may be unusual and gives people a different experience as they come together. One last piece I want to look at together at the moment, Orchot Chaim, a little bit of a different angle. Do not be irate with wayfarers and your guests. Receive them with a cheerful face. Do not fail to give them provisions for their journeys. Accompany them on their way and comfort them, for they are far from home and dejected. I love texts that start with, don't do this. Because you can trust that whenever there's a text that says, don't do this, it's because we do it. So this invites, and I'm going to have us turn in small chavrutot in just a moment, to think of what are those places where, oh, I'm annoyed with my guests, or when are they leaving, or yeah. What are the things, or I'm scared to let this person into my house, or these kinds of people, but not these kinds of people. What are the internal objections, resistances, fears that may arise that we're being invited to notice and turn toward and work with? And it's interesting that it invites the reminder, greet them with a cheerful face. Bring whatever may be stirring within, how can you nonetheless reach for relationship to soften yourself and connect with them? And also, don't just think about meeting the immediate need, but as they leave, send them off with blessing, send them off with goodness, and remember the emotional experience that they may be in. How can you bring comfort? So,
can I say one? Mm-hmm. I really love this mitzvah, and I really do my best to practice it. But I also have to know when I don't have the capacity, you know, and honor that too. I just wanted to say that.
Great. And it's valuable that when we look at and explore where are our limits or our fears or the resistance, first to just know what it is. To be curious about it, so that we're not only acting from habit or from conditioning, but can bring insight and wisdom. And there may be moments where, the wise thing to do is not to host for another 2.5 weeks, but to say, how can I help you travel to your next location?
With a cheerful face, that's
yes.
Important.
To bring awareness, yeah.
I just wanted to add, I love your story about how you're really great.
My aunt, yeah.
You're so honest.
Mm.
And to your point, like, when you host what you don't really feel like hosting, it's felt.
Yeah.
So the honesty and truthfulness of your, of being open and welcome is so important. Otherwise, it's not honest and open.
Do our best.
Yeah.
So I love that. Mm-hmm. How hard it is to
feel. Yeah. So please turn to one partner, maximum a group of three, and there are questions over the next page to explore, like, how do you already extend hospitality, and what's important to you, and why, and how, and then, just a moment, and then number two, with hit lam dut, with honest inquiry and non-judging, non-shaming curiosity, where do you get a little sticky around hospitality? What are the places that you'd like to bring more awareness or ease? So discuss with each other, and we'll gather back shortly.